Welcome to the Frank Weltner Show and the review of the world today. This week, the defense minister of Israel, Shaul Mofaz, threatened to intensify military operation in Gaza. According to Israeli radio, Mofaz instructed the Israeli forces to perform a series of counterstrikes, which are not restricted. I just have to ask myself, exactly what do they mean by unrestricted? Does this mean that they can go in and shoot these people down from helicopters, from larger airships? Can they go in on the ground? What can they do? They just gave up this part of Israel to the Palestinians by agreement. And now all of a sudden here they are going back in again. This doesn't make any sense to me unless you understand the Israeli mind, the mind of a Zionist, which is the mind of someone that wants to control everything around him. The mind of a person who operates not only on fear, but on corruption. Corruption in which Israel and its adherents in the Rothschild banking empire and the New World Order want to control everything from Jerusalem, so that this cabal of cooperators, of people who collaborate with one another, whether they be in England or America or France, or in Israel, or even in the Arab countries where they have their people planted, that they get everything that they want by manipulating media, by passing enough dollars around, and making sure that these countries basically will do anything and everything that they want. We find almost immediately thereafter that Israel has fired a missile into a Gaza building. Of course, it's not a surprise that the Israelis would attack anyone in Gaza Strip. The Israelis, it seems, just believe that that everything that goes on around them is grist for their mill. So they feel that they can go in anywhere and attack anybody at will, and no one will do anything. Of course, this causes all sorts of troubles within the country of Israel itself, where the government is in constant turmoil. And we find also that the Likud is constantly voting against Sharon and then for Sharon and against Sharon. His own Likud party, he has decided to start a new party and to practically dissolve his original party because, guess what, they wouldn't vote for him because they thought that he was a loser. So he showed them how much of a loser he was by starting his own party, and now the Likud party itself, of which he has been the head, is probably going to be the real loser. It's just amazing what goes on in Israel. We have not only the militants, but we have the peaceniks, we have the communists, we have the religious people who simply want to live there and worship their Lord, whom they see to be the Lord of the chosen people. How in the world they can think that they are chosen, considering the bastardization of many countries of the world, as well as their own nation, that they have performed over the centuries, and the negative effect that they've had on everybody by their parasitism is just totally beyond me. Much of the mafia of this world, the pornographers and so forth, are embedded in Israel and devoted to it, and they give it money. It's just absolutely amazing to know the filth and the despair and the corruption that takes place within the Jewish communities because of the large number of mafia-like situations that occur there constantly and always have. In the Soviet Union, which was started by the Jews at the turn of the century in 1917, you have the mafia that has moved to America, and people like Meyer Lansky was able to build a huge Jewish empire, and Bronfman, who likes to run the Jewish World Congress, he's from a Jewish mafia family of whiskey barons from Canada. They used to push this whiskey across the Great Lakes in the United States during Prohibition. And the man should probably just be in jail, and his whole family should be in jail. Instead, he's a billionaire who is very, very well respected and kissed up to by the ADL and all these people who claim that white people, that Europeans, are real dangers to the world community. Whereas it is these mafia characters who tend to simply exude the power of Jews and are able to buy their way into every piece of the Jewish empire and to have their way with the Europeans and with the Jews themselves. Of course, you have to ask yourself if the brainless wonders of the New World Order, which of course is the Zionist or Jew World Order, have any brains at all, wanting to destroy the greatest countries within this particular planet that we live on. I mean, why in the world would they want to destroy the greatest civilizations around them? Sometimes I think, well, it must have to do not only with arrogance, but with the feeling of power that people get when they decide that they're going to go after someone who is bigger than they are. Think of the ego. Think of the ego of these people who really represent far less than a 0.5% of the world's population. How many of them do we have? Like 16 million, 12 million? We really don't know. They change their name so much, it's very, very difficult to find out exactly who the Jews are that run everything. It's almost impossible. And they want it to be that way. They'll change their names. They'll do whatever they have to do to make absolutely certain that you don't know exactly who they are. Because to know who they are would be to give you some power over them. And being able to control through deception is the motto not only of the CIA, but of the Jews themselves and of their ingrates in the Mossad, who are really working hand in hand with their Jewish cohorts who are in the CIA and in the M6 and all of these other areas where people of so-called quote intelligence tend to operate. I sometimes wonder if there is any intelligence among anybody that's operating, because it's so difficult to make anything intelligent out of the world at large that we see today. Let's take a look at how wonderful things have become. Now, we'll take the country of Hungary, which has a lot of Jews in it. Not as much as there used to be, but there are still some Jews. And by a lot, I mean just, you know, a percent or two. It's not a whole lot of people. It's not a whole lot anywhere. And you have to ask yourself, well, how can so few people control the world? Well, how do so few people control the United States? How do so few people control your town or your city? How do so few people control the utility company that brings you your electricity? There may be just 100 people in your utility company, and yet it may serve 3 million people. But at the top, there's only maybe 50 or 25 or 100 who are making really big bucks controlling this huge octopus that feeds electricity into 3 million homes in your area. So you see, if they can do it, then it's very easy for a small group of people like the New World Order or the Jew World Order, whatever you want to call it. People tend to call it the New World Order because they don't want to use the word Zionist or Jew because they're afraid they'll be called anti-Semitic. But in my opinion, and of course I'm called anti-Semitic all the time since I own Jew Watch, and yet I'm very respectful toward Jews. It's just that I like studying them. That is my forte. I like to look at them. I like to see what they're doing. And the reason I like to is that I come from a Christian, not a Jewish tradition. And I've noticed that the Jews are doing things like trying to get rid of Christmas at the malls. They're trying to get rid of any religious observances in schools because they feel that this would not be good for Jews. And I really don't care what would be good for Jews because I'm not for inclusion. I used to be. I used to be for inclusion. But having seen what the New World Order has been doing to America, to England, to France, to Palestine, and to other countries around the world, and how they seem so darn interested in starting wars of liberation, which we used to call colonialization and communism, which are both heads and tails of the same coin, is exactly what the Jews are telling us to do. Oh, go into Iraq. Destroy it. Go into Syria, destroy it. Go into Saudi Arabia, destroy it. Go into Iran, destroy it. Of course, it doesn't matter that our boys are doing the dying, that our money is the money that's being wasted, that our future is being sold so that our children and our grandchildren will have to pay off these huge war debts while the Jews go off to Israel or to China or wherever else they're going to suck the brains and blood and money out of the next tribe of people that they're going to infest. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Well, you see, it matters to me because I'm not Jewish. And pardon me if I notice what you're doing, since you are running my country and England and a lot of other countries that have my people in it, and not your people. Oh, a few of your people are in it, but the vast majority are my people. And I'm just democratic enough that I don't want you controlling my people, because you're just a little insignificant little minority. But you want to be a minority and yet to control everything for the majority. Now, I have a story up here from Jew Watch. It's called pesticide.hu. That's the name of the particular internet website, pesticide, pesticide.hu. It's in Hungary. The daily dish of cosmopolitan Budapest. And it says that the forecast in Budapest calls for scattered snowfall and Jew baiting. Yes, that's what it says. It says, if you happen to be outside in Pest around noon today, which is slang for Budapest, or looking outside, you might have noticed something different. Snow. That's right. Today is officially, okay, unofficially, the first day of winter in Budapest. And we couldn't be happier. I think they're wrong about that. I don't think that the day this was written was actually the first day of winter, unless they have a different tradition than we do. But it goes on, probably tongue-in-cheek. For one thing, ever since the switch from coal to gas power in most of the city's buildings, Budapest actually looks all festive and white when it snows, enough to stick, at least for a few minutes. Obviously, the coal used to destroy the snow and make it black. But now that they have natural gas, that's over with. The story goes on, plus all the cold nicely freezes up the dog turds. Meanwhile, a proposal by Hungary's Liberal Alliance of Free Democrats to cut off state funding for religious institutions has some leaders of Hungary's Christian churches in a tizzy, which is not great news because the membership of the Alliance of Free Democrats is, now get this, you guessed it, heavily Jewish, and, well, you do the math. The Alliance of Free Democrats, says pesticide.hu, the proposal of the Alliance of Free Democrats is simply anti-Christian and anti-Catholic provocation. This was a quote from Bishop Andris Verez, the secretary of the Hungarian Catholic Conference. And they're reporting this from a story in today's Budapest Times where this was reported. Now, while apparently no one has yet publicly linked the Alliance of Free Democrats proposal to the fact that many of its members are Jewish, you could just bet your last warm sweater that lots of the law's opponents have in private and are just beside themselves when viewing the chutzpah of the Jews in that organization. For some reason, of course, they're afraid to say that it's Jews that run the organization. Same way that when people talk about crime, they don't say, well, it's black crime or it's Hispanic crime, but it's crime caused somehow by people not having enough money. It's socioeconomic crime. And yet it only occurs in certain areas, and there's socioeconomic areas of people from other races where there simply is no crime, but nonetheless, political correctness says this is what you have to say. As for what happens next in Budapest, there's likely to be a sharp cold snap followed by storms, says the author, after which the whole thing will quickly blow over, while remaining chilly until someone in the distant future, which, by the way, are coincidence, is exactly what the weather is supposed to do, comes to its senses and realizes that it was Jews who decided that Christians shouldn't be supported by their government. Well, I'll just be dipped in pork butts. Have you ever heard of such a thing, Jews having that much chutzpah that they don't want Christians to have money, but they want money for Israel? Billions and billions of dollars every year for Israel? Well, that's the report from Jew Watch and from Budapest this week. And let's take a look at Harvard. Here's something at Harvard. There's a professor at Harvard. He's Jewish, by the way. Otherwise, I wouldn't be mentioning it here on this particular program. And you would think from what this Jew has to say that Harvard hates the white race. Now, college students will tell you that a university education is a guilt trip for whites. And you know that it is. I mean, you've heard what's going on in these colleges. The purpose is to prevent whites from appreciating and absorbing their own culture and to make it difficult for whites to resist the unreasonable demands, by that I mean quotas and reparations, etc., from people of color. To the questions, who am I, what am I, the white university graduate must answer, I am a racist, sexist, and homophobic oppressor. That's absolutely mandatory, or else, well, you might find your grades down, you might find yourself removed from the university entirely if you say things the wrong way. Neither parents, trustees, alumni, nor the public are aware of the anti-white propaganda that masquerades as education, unless, of course, you listen to this program, in which case you are always aware. When someone who is aware tells them, they think the person is exaggerating in order to make a point. Here comes Harvard-educated Noel Ignatieff, an academic at Harvard's W.E.B. Du Bois Institute for African American Research. He is the founder of a journal, Race Traitor, which has to, as its motto, treason to whiteness is loyalty to humanity. And that journal's purpose is to, quote, abolish the white race, unquote. Dr. Ignatieff intends cultural and psychological genocide for whites. That's right. And, of course, that's a very, very good thing. You can ask any Jew that you want. That's a very, very good thing. He says the key to solving the social problems of our age is to abolish the white race. He says, make no mistake about it, we intend to keep bashing the dead white males and the live ones, and the females too, until the social construct known as the white race is destroyed. Oh, not merely deconstructed, but destroyed. He writes in his book that the goal of abolishing the white race is on its face, so desirable that some may find it hard to believe that it could occur in any opposition other form other than from committed white supremacists. And thus he puts whites on notice that if they oppose their abolition, they are white supremacists. The Washington Times has reported that Dr. Ignatieff is himself Jewish. Yes. If Jewish intellectuals and Israeli political leaders can be believed, Jews have a cultural and racial consciousness. Israel is the Jewish homeland, and Israelis seem determined to keep it that way. Now, can anyone imagine a Gentile at an Israeli university founding a magazine devoted to abolishing the Jewish race? Well, I don't think you're going to see that. I really don't think you're going to see that. Yet Dr. Ignatieff believes that it is self-evident that whites in their homeland should be abolished. Now, you might ask yourself, where did this Jew get this view? This Zionist's only education was at Harvard, where he received 2 graduate degrees. Is Harvard embarrassed about Dr. Ignatieff? Absolutely not. In fact, he's been showcased in the current issue of Harvard Magazine. Getting rid of whiteness is not controversial at Harvard because it is the business of American universities to rid this nation and this world of Europeans and of all white people. Because a white skin is a mark of privilege. It is not the privilege of being admitted to Harvard, even though you don't meet the entrance requirements because you're not white. No, 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 no. It is the privilege of being hired independently of ability because of government-enforced racial quotas. Well, you say, well, that might be wrong. Well, yes, it might be wrong, mightn't it? But not if you go to Harvard. You would at Harvard learn that it was right. It is not the privilege of being able to sue whites and white companies if blacks are not proportionally represented in the workforce. It is not the privilege of being able to call whites every name in the book and sue if a white replies in kind. No, no, no. The privilege of being white, ladies and gentlemen, is that whites can secretly believe they are superior and, as long as they don't mention it, be loyal to the white race. Dr. Ignatieff says, as he whispers poisonously into your ear, that the white race is like a private club. I am sure that Dr. Ignatieff is well informed, but I see no signs of this white loyalty. Not at all. And according to Paul Craig Roberts, most of the multiculturalists and radical feminists in this world, guess what? Most of the radical multiculturalists and the radical feminists in this world are white. Whites disadvantage whites by imposing racial quotas on whites. Despite widespread opposition to quotas, neither white political party will act to stop unconstitutional quotas, which have made a mockery of equality under law. Whites are literally inundated by massive non-white immigration, and neither white political party will act to restrain non-white immigration. On the contrary, both parties pander to the immigrants. And isn't that strange? Isn't that strange? It's true, according to Paul Craig Roberts, whites pander in their parties to non-whites, even though the whites make up 90% of their votes. They nonetheless stab their own white people in the back, and they pander to the immigrants. But Dr. Ignatieff, who I said before is a Jew and a Zionist, has an idea just like Hitler's that a race is guilty and must go. The communists said it was a guilty class that had to go. And Paul Craig Roberts, who's the author, along with Lawrence M. Stratton, of The Tyranny of Good Intentions, How Prosecutors and Bureaucrats Are Trampling the Constitution in the Name of Justice, says that if you thought genocide was left behind in the 20th century, be appraised that today, genocide has a home at Harvard University and at all places of higher education. And I can tell you this myself, it also has that same place in high schools, where every child is taught immediately upon entering that if he's white, his race is supremacist and has created all sorts of evils upon this planet. I don't know about you, but I'm extremely weary of Jewish supremacism and how they say that we as whites are the supremacists of this universe when we are not. It is the Jews that are running the banks. It's the Jews who are running the Jewish lobby. And who, guess what, are now telling Christians that although the Jews have the Jewish lobby known as IPAC, that any similar Christian lobby simply is not wanted. That, oh, that's just too much. Just too much. And recently we found during Christmas time that the Jews who own almost all of our malls and all of our large department stores do not want the mention of Christmas. They want to sell to us during Christmas. They don't want any mention of the fact that it is Christmas. None whatsoever. In fact, if you're at some of these stores and you mention Merry Christmas to somebody, do you know that you can get fired? Yes, you can get fired. But you can say Happy Kwanzaa or Happy Hanukkah. And that's all right. That's quite all right. If you say Happy Hanukkah or Happy Kwanzaa to somebody, hey, you're okay. You're okay. Oh, yes, sir. But don't you dare say Merry Christmas, because this would definitely put you into a situation where you might lose your job. And rightfully so. I mean, we wouldn't want you pandering to these white Christian European types, would we? Would that be right? Realizing how evil and despicable white people are, and how we as white people need to be erased from the face of this earth, how we are responsible for the blacks and the Jews and everybody else being put upon and being kept down. Yes, the Jews have been kept down too. They've been kept down by appointing them to run the World Bank, by appointing them to run the United States Federal Reserve System, by appointing them to run many, many banks and foundations, so that almost every bit of money that has been allocated for grants is decided by Jews. And we whites have put them into this position, which they are very afraid to relinquish, as a matter of fact. very, very afraid to relinquish this position. And I think that that the reason that they're afraid to relinquish this position is that they just don't want a white person to take over from a Jewish person or from a Zionist. Yeah, they don't want an evil white person. And can you blame them? I mean, here you have these innocent Jews who've done nothing in this world that has hurt anyone. Well, I mean, they may have started the Soviet Union and communism itself, and started the Soviet Union and then used their power over the Soviet military to go into town after town in the Ukraine and Byelorussia and Western Russia and all over that area and murder Christians until 65 to 100 million Christians were either dead or dying in the gulags, in the streets, in the rivers, in the boxcars in which they had been placed by these vicious Jewish armies. They had all the guns because they took the guns away from all the people, because it wouldn't be right for them to have weapons, only for the Zionists, the Jews, the communists to have the weapons, and to tell these evil, ingrate whites what to do. Well, we kept them down, though. We kept them down so that they couldn't go to Palestine and destroy that country for the people who live there and create Israel. We did keep them out of there, didn't we? I find it so hard to remember, because I am trying to remember that we as white people are evil, and so we must have kept the Jews from starting Israel. Because since we are the people of power and of colonialism, the people with all the militaries, we must have kept them from doing that, because we wouldn't let Israel do anything, because they're Jewish and we're anti-Jewish, aren't we? So therefore, we know that Israel could not exist, that the Palestinians must be running Jerusalem and Haifa, and that the Jews are somewhere in some brick oven being burnt right now, because we white people are so bad. We couldn't possibly have let them go and do that. And there is no Jewish lobby either, because the Jews are victims, and they're not ever going to be allowed to tell white people what to do. So therefore, they couldn't have IPAC, they couldn't have people in the White House, they couldn't have started the war in Iraq, because it would help Israel. So all these things that I'm confused about, these wars, etc., that are going on right now, they can't be happening, because I'm an evil white man, and the Jew is being kept down by me. That's the logic. You may laugh, but that's the logic. We are so evil that nothing that's happening in the 20th century that the Jews have caused to happen could have happened. And therefore, if we are going to follow the mantra that we as white people kept the Jews down, then there's no way that we could be having the war in Iraq. There's no way there could be an Israel. There's no way there could be a New York City filled with Jews, or banks run by Jews, or a Federal Reserve run by Jews, or an International Monetary Fund, World Bank run by Jews, because we kept them down. And if we didn't keep them down, then guess what? The Jews are lying and we're not evil at all. Oh, now there's a politically incorrect idea. I couldn't possibly have come up with an idea like that, now could I? Oh, I must be a worshiper of Moloch and Baal. I have to be a really bad person. And I must be a bad person because I'm always reading magazines and newspapers which are printed by the great media Molochs of this world. The Murdochs, the Levins, the Levis. All of these people. And how about Andrea Mitchell? You ever watch her? You know, she's on, I believe it's NBC. She's a reportress. Is that what they call a female? A reportress. She's a reportress for NBC, I believe. One of those big networks. And guess who she's married to? Alan Greenspan. Well, they're both Jewish, of course. So here you have this media that is objective. And the reportress is married to Alan Greenspan. Now, I beg your pardon, but if I were working for a company that was supposed to be getting financing from certain banks, I wouldn't hire the wife of a banker to come and work at my company, because I'd be afraid that well, if I have to get financing, she's going to put her little finger in everybody's ear, pull them to her, and say, you need to get this for my husband. And Andrea Mitchell, I mean, she's married to the most powerful person in economics in this country. And yet she's a objective reporter for NBC News, and I find that a problem. I just don't see how that really could happen. It's a mystery of the church, or of the synagogue, I suppose. There are just so many mysteries out and about. And I get most of these things right off of the front page of Jew Watch, where I place all of the stories that I put in this particular news program that I have. Let's take, for instance, the story that was in the Jerusalem Post at jpost.com this week, entitled The Phantom Arab Moderate. And here we learn that even those Israelis who claim that peace between sovereign Israel, notice that, between sovereign Israel and the Arabs, they're not sovereign at all, and the Arabs, the peace between sovereign Israel and the Arabs, who I guess are not sovereign, because they didn't say they were, and if a Jew doesn't say they're sovereign, then I guess they can't be. The peace between sovereign Israel and the Arabs is a practical possibility. That those Israelis who claim this rest their claim on the bald assumption that there exists a solid body of Arabs who are moderate. And they have moderate in quotations here. As though no Arab could possibly be moderate. They all have to be carrying knives with visions of killing little Jewish girls in their hearts and little Jewish boys. I am an Arab. I must kill Jews. Like, this is what they think. Like, they couldn't just be normal human beings who just normally have a religion and they go about their business. No, they have to be anti-civilization or anti-something, according to this author, Shmuel Katz. Well, Shmuel, or Shmuel Katz, whatever your name is, you go on and say they do not face the reality taught by many decades of experience that the most, quote, moderate, unquote, of the Arabs, who might have a hand in setting the policies of their people, do not differ in their view of what Israel's future should be from the manifestly immoderate mainstream Arabs. Don't you love alliteration? Get these M's here. From the manifestly immoderate mainstream of Arabs. Now, this character says that they differ only on the method or process by which the elimination of the Jewish state is to be accomplished. Well, I don't think the Arabs are the only people who feel this way, Shmuel Katz. I don't think so. I think that millions of people around the world who have watched the crappy way in which the Israeli state has operated its business, how it has taken this country away from these poor little Arabs and Palestinians who were living there, who have, you've even bulldozed their cemeteries. You've destroyed all of the papers concerning the properties that they owned. You've destroyed their buildings, their streets, their schools, everything that they had in your madness to commit genocide against the Arabs. You have done the same thing that you claimed Hitler did. You go on and you say, Mr. Katz in Israel, that this is true of all the Arab states, members of the Arab League, but most importantly of the states that have launched wars against Israel since 1948. As though, Mr. Katz, Israel didn't launch a war against the Arabs. You know that your state launched most of these wars and then claim that the Arabs launched them against you. And the only reason you got by with it was, oh, you own the newspapers. Isn't that strange? You own the newspaper, so of course you were able to pull the wool over everybody's eyes. And weren't you sheep herders, and doesn't wool come from sheep? Yeah, you're still the sheep herding nomads, swirling your New York Times, your Washington Post, your St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and all of your other Jewish publications into the goyim homes of America, pretending that you are a goyim, when you, in fact you are a Zionist Jew, and your goals are different than those of Americans. Because, let's face it, folks, you didn't really take. Well, you took. You took and you took and you took. You took money, you bought the media, and you have just bleached our people even whiter than we ever were, because we hardly have any money left. You guys are getting all the money. We have to go and work for one of your companies in order to get anything. Oh, you may not be there, but you'll be in the holding company that owns it way up above, or you'll be loaning the money to it. And one way or the other, what I do goes to your pocket. Well, Mr. Katz tells us the outlook of such phantom moderates in the Arab world has not been kept secret, and that it comes to the surface from time to time from quite authoritative quarters. He says in December 1980, shortly after Israel's peace treaty with Egypt was signed, a former prime minister of Egypt, Mustafa Khalil, delivered a guest lecture at Tel Aviv University, and there, speaking, as he said, frankly and scientifically, he pointed out that the Arabs do not regard the Jews as a nation at all, but as a religion only. When it comes to nationality, he declared, a Jew can be an Egyptian Jew, a French Jew, or a German Jew. Egyptians, he said, wanted to be good neighbors with Israel, but they expected the Jews to change. Well, isn't that, Mr. Katz, exactly what you as a Jew say about Americans and Russians and the English and the Germans? That you have German Christians, United States Christians, Canadian Christians, Russian Christians, that you have Chinese Christians? Isn't that what you say about Christians? That they are a religion and not a nationality? It seems to me that's what you said, and therefore I just wonder why you're saying it this way, because you say the same thing about Christians, you say it about Arabs. You say, well, there's Palestinian Muslims, there's Egyptian Muslims, oh, she's an Iranian Muslim, etc. You say the same thing. Why are you pointing out that if someone says that about Jews, that suddenly they don't want you to have your country? He may not have meant that at all. He may have meant that he sees you as a Jew and not as an Israeli. But you're turning it around, Mr. Katz, and trying to make something bad about it, like you always do, that bad spin. Oh, well, Khalil wants to get rid of Israel because he notes that there's Egyptian Jews, French Jews, and German Jews. And at the same time, you report that he said that Egyptians wanted to be good neighbors with Israel, but they expected the Jews to change. Well, wouldn't you? I mean, the Jews have attacked Egypt over and over and over again. According to Mr. Katz, years ago, another leading Egyptian intellectual by the name of Boutros Ghali, cabinet minister and subsequently secretary general of the United Nations, gave equally cultured utterance to the same idea. Horrors, oh horrors, sir. But then gave voice also to its underlying threat. Mr. Boutros Ghali, well, he must have a stutter, don't you think? What's your name? Boutros Ghali. What's your name? Frank Veltner. Anyway, Mr. Ghali told a Cairo journal that if Israel maintained its Jewish character and did not assimilate in the Arab homeland, quote, then we will have no integration of Israel with this region, unquote. Well, the Zionist, Mr. Katz, then points his little snitty finger in Boutros Ghali's face and says, indeed, if Israel defended its right to sovereignty, he added, quote, I think you can have no peace in this region, unquote. Well, I don't think that he said that if you defended your sovereignty, you'd have no peace. I think what he said was what you just reported. And that was that Boutros Ghali, who was an internationalist, said that if you don't integrate with these people and accept some Arab ways of looking at things and become friends with these people, then there's going to be no peace in the region if you just keep wanting to gobble up acre after acre of land and telling Arabs and Palestinians they can't own any property in Jerusalem or anywhere in Israel, but anywhere you go, you can buy stuff up and never sell it back to an Arab, and that it's genocide. This Katz character says that right after the Yom Kippur War, that the editor of Egypt's leading weekly journal, which is Al Musawa, explained that the English word peace can be translated into Arabic by either salam or suth. But these words had different meanings. Then he wrote, if the Jews returned to the 1949 armistice lines in Israel, where the Arab state's aggression against newborn Israel had been halted, the Jews could expect no more than salam, or peace. It was only by returning to their senses and dwelling under one roof and under one flag with the Arabs of Palestine that they could expect sulh, or real peace, or reconciliation. And Mr. Katz has a problem with that. He doesn't want the Arabs to come flying into Israel again. He wants Israel to go flying into all Arab areas, demolish their homes with bulldozers, squash their children under the bricks and mortar that are crashing down on them, and to laugh all the way across the desert as they kill and kill and kill. Mr. Katz says, at that very time, reports were circulating in the West that in Egypt, which had launched and lost four wars against Israel since the Jewish state's birth in 48, a new moderate, more friendly wind was blowing toward Israel, and that an American writer, Joan Peters, of course Jewish, I just thought you said that you couldn't be an American Jew and an Israeli Jew. You had to just be an Israeli. So Joan Rivers couldn't be an American. She has to be a Israeli. There is no religion, remember? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Katz. I keep pointing holes in your Swiss cheese and peering through it at your own nudity, which is pretty self-evident since you have no mind. So you say that this American writer, who is really an Israeli by the name of Joan Peters because she couldn't be a Jew, having been sent on a journalistic mission to Egypt, decided to test these reports on the spot, and that her findings were published in an article in Commentary Magazine, which is really run by Zionists, I can assure you, if you ever read Commentary Magazine, under the title In Search of Modern Egyptians, and that she started on her project in America by studying literature, attesting to a positive change in Egyptian attitudes toward Israel. And what did she find, Mr. Katz? She wrote, to my amazement, once in Egypt I found virtually no evidence of such a change. She interviewed as representative a cross-section of Egyptians as she could find. She lists them: government officials, writers, academics, scientists, demographers, doctors, architects, engineers, shopkeepers, housewives, students, soldiers, salesmen, cab drivers even, waiters, women's rights advocates, secretaries, carpenters, travel agents, communists, leftists, nationalists, and right-wing conservatives. None of them had any concept of a change of heart about Israel. She recorded in detailed quotations a number of her interviews and learned that far from Egyptians being friendly to Israel, there truly existed a consensus not only of fierce hatred of Israel, but of virulent anti-Semitism, which in some, according to Mr. Katz, would deny the Jewish state's right even to exist. Gee, isn't that what the Israelis have been saying about the Palestinian state? Well, we came in here, the Palestinians had their little country, or whatever it was, duchy, whatever, under Turkish rule and British control, and we took it from them. And we certainly don't want them to exist here in Jerusalem any longer. Oh, but these Egyptians not wanting Israel to exist there any longer either, well, they're just bad people. They must have bad blood. They must be those racially inferior Arabs. Yes, that's what they must be, Mr. Katz, isn't it? They are racially inferior Arabs who are spitting in the face of your Jewish supremacism. How dare these smug little people, these little inferior simians, question someone as mighty as you, Mr. Katz? with your fine, proud Judaism and your Zionism and your puffy chest. You who are so used to stepping on these people as though they are just insects, as many Israelis call the Palestinians. Yes, Mr. Katz, you are a fair, wonderful Jewish supremacist, and I bow down before you, and I worship you, and I love you, sir. I love you. Will you take over my country some more? Will you tax me more to have wars in the Middle East? Will you kill my son in Iran for me? I think I would like that. Or maybe you could send him back with a couple of limbs missing, please. Even with limbs missing, I would love to have my son back. Oh, please, Mr. Katz, please allow me this one thing. An old man like myself, allow me to have my son with a few limbs missing. Mr. Katz says that 30 years have passed, and one fine day in December, we have read the report of another search for moderate Arabs, and this time it is in Israel itself, and their search is reported by an Israeli writer. Well, of course, it must be true then, right? You're an Israeli, and you're always fair, Mr. Katz. Yossi Klein. Do you know that Klein means little in German? It means tiny. Yossi, tiny. Most Yossi Klein. Halevi. Ah, they got Levi in there, didn't we? Halevi. Who sought common ground, cultural, spiritual, and hence as a Jewish moderate, political. Why is it moderate in quotations in this particular reference to Mr. Yossi Klein Halevi? Every time you mention Arabs, you use the word Arab, quote, moderate, unquote, but you just said a Jewish moderate. As though there are such things, and you didn't question it with a quotation mark. Oh, Mr. Katz, please. You so disappoint me, sir. I thought you were going to be fair, and you haven't been fair at all with the Arabs, or with me, or with America, or with England. No. You just want your little Jewish people to be supremacists over all of us, don't you? Anyway, Mr. Yossi Klein Halevi, according to Mr. Katz, who is fair himself, that Mr. Halevi is a Jewish moderate, without quotes, and a political moderate with Muslim-Arab counterparts. He, too, like Joan Peters, that wonderful Semitic Zionist, and American, even though Israelis, you know, although they're Jews, they still have their own country, etc., etc. So, but let's not go there again. He, too, like Joan Peters, the dreadful Zionist 3 decades earlier, had numerous candid conversations with, in this case, Palestinian Arabs at all levels of society. And guess what? Mr. Halevi found that one telling example with General Nasser Youssef, the Palestinian Authority's interior minister, showed him that there were no moderates. Oh my God. What else could go wrong? Halevi, as is related in the palace, in the Jerusalem Post of September the 28th of that year, asked Youssef, hypothetically, what would happen if Israel withdrew to the 1967 borders? And of course, borders are in quotes, because they weren't borders according to this person, because the Israeli border is far larger than these borders, these pretend little borders, these temporary borders that have now been expanded so that Israel's huge ego can continue to enlarge itself at the expense of dying Muslims. That if Israel withdrew to the 1967 borders, uprooted the settlements, and redivided Jerusalem, Youssef replied that the refugees would be returning to the area, and then there would be no need for an artificial border between Israel and Palestine. But, said Halevi to Youssef, aren't we negotiating today over a two-state solution? Yes, Youssef had replied, as an interim step, you aren't separate from us, you are part of us. Just as there are Muslim Arabs and Christian Arabs, you are Jewish Arabs. Can you imagine the chutzpah of this Arab saying that we are not Arab Israelis, but you are Jewish Arabs? Oh, horror of horrors. Can't go two ways. And this Arab went on to speak of this unified Palestinian state joining with other Arab states. General Youssef adds, Halevi, is widely known as a moderate deeply opposed to terror because it is counterproductive to the Palestinian cause. Yusuf is thus fully representative, according to Mr. Katz, of the supreme chutzpah, precisely of the moderate Arabs. Emboldened by the great success worldwide in disseminating the grotesque claim to a Palestinian history that never existed, mainstream Arabs teach their children and make it plain to the world that their intention is to destroy the Jewish state directly if possible or by phases, so as often described by their late leader, as so often described by their late leader Yasser Arafat. Well, isn't that what you've been doing to the Palestinians, sir? Haven't you been erasing their history by plowing under their tombstones, by destroying their homes, their streets that they used to have so they can't find out even where they used to live, that they have no history, that all the papers that related to their property and their births and their deaths have been consumed by the fire of Israel so that they really have no past? The same thing that you accuse the Germans and the Polish of doing and the Russians and other people of doing to Jews? Are you just describing what they did as an excuse for what you've been doing all along? Isn't that pretty close to the truth, Mr. Levy? I mean, Mr. Katz, that you yourself, you Jews, have been destroying the history of other people in order to aggrandize yourself with the power that you have by occupying their states. Mr. Katz, you also say here in your article that the Arab who is moderate steps in and proposes a moderate alternative, which is the vaporization of the Jewish national identity. I don't think that's what he said, Mr. Katz. I just read what he said, and what he said was not that he was going to vaporize the Jewish national identity, but that he was going to become friends with you by absorbing you into the Arab nations as a brother, that you would be Jewish Arabs. You have no national identity, Mr. Katz. Your nation is a ripoff. You have a bunch of Europeans, a bunch of Russians, living in Israel, and a bunch of Americans living in Israel, who say they're Jewish, but now you say, well, they're not Jewish, they're Israelis. Well, they came there, if I'm not mistaken, because they were Jewish, because before there was Israel, these people were Jews, and they may have been atheist Jews or communist Jews, and some of them might have been Zionist Jews, but since they'd never been to Israel, they had no national history. And they had no national identity. They had a religious identity, or a cultural, social, tribal identity, Mr. Katz. You're just playing with words here, aren't you, sir? You're just nothing but a word thief. That's all you are. You're using words like toilet paper to wipe your ass and our ass with it, and it's just filled with your verbal crap. That's all it is, Mr. Katz. And to tell you the truth, as a journalist, I know BS when I hear it. I know crap when I hear it. I hear crap all the time. Hey, I read the American and the European press, and that's pure crap because your people are writing it. Because you are a bunch of supremacists. You own it all, or almost all of it. And you figured out that you're going to shut the internet down by grabbing AOL and Earthlink and all of these other things that are there, space.com, where there are 1 million or 2 million blogs right now. And when Rupert Murdoch, who is Jewish, because his mother was Jewish, her name was Elizabeth Joy Green, and I outed her and him to the world in Jew Watch, and the outing was correct. And Mr. Murdoch has never sued me and will never sue me for that because it's true. And if he sues me, it will come out even further that it's true. And his foot will go into the Jewish tar deeper and deeper and deeper. So there's no reason for him to do that. Because he knows full well that Elizabeth Joy Green was a member of the most wealthy Jewish family in Australia. And without her money, his daddy wouldn't have had a newspaper. And he wouldn't have had a newspaper. And he wouldn't have all of these connections with the Jewish banking community, which has allowed him to create the Fox News Network and to buy his tabloids. And by the way, I think some of the stuff on the Fox News Network's great, and I think some of the tabloids are great. But still, he's Jewish, and he should admit it. So, Mr. Katz, in the Jerusalem Post, you say that the Arab propaganda success has not been achieved without passive Jewish help, the help of unbelievable inaction. The most egregious blunder of successful Israeli governments and Jewish diaspora leaders has been the complete failure to build a national information center, what we call Hasbara, having the scope and authority of an Israeli government ministry to tell the world, but first of all, the Jewish people, the truth. The truth. The truth! T-R-U-T-H, the truth of their own nation's unique relationship with the land of Israel. Reaching back 3,000 years to its biblical history and resting on the momentous modern international acknowledgement of that relationship in the 1922 League of Nations mandate for the reconstitution of the Jewish national home in Palestine. Well, I don't believe when they said you would have a national home that they meant that you were going to kick out the Arabs. It meant that you were going to go and have a little barrio there to live in. That's what they meant. That you would have a national home. You could go there and live in a barrio surrounded by Arabs. That's what they meant. Not that you would surround Arabs with the military and push them out, because they are what you consider to be inferior races. That you great supremacist Jews, you of the superior race, we must kick out those scumbag Arabs. We must kick them out. No, that's not what the League of Nations wanted. You were going to live there like you lived in a ghetto in Poland. A Jewish national home in Palestine, so that you could be close to your little altars and little idols and godlet things that you have there. Mr. Katz believes that the center, this national information center, which is the national propaganda center of Israel, is what it would be, moreover, would enlist all possible resources, Christian as well as Jewish, as long as we can hoodwink them, we can use those Christians to counter the monstrous fictions of the so-called Palestinian cause. And now, as he says, the vicious waves of anti-Semitism swirling through the nations of the West. Well, Mr. Katz, you need to go to your litter box, Mr. Katz, that is named for you, your cat litter box, where the little brown balls of non-truth that you have placed here in the Jerusalem Post can be found, because they came out of your posterior and not out of your frontal lobe, sir. You have crapped them out into this hateful article against Arabs. This is the biggest piece of phony Jewish Zionist supremacism I've ever seen, in which you have taken these poor little Arabs that you've exploited by taking over their homelands and said that they are, quote, moderates, unquote, meaning just the opposite, they are not moderate. Well, who can be moderate when some foreign race of people comes flying out of Europe with guns and kills you and takes your land and kills your father and your grandfather, bulldozes your houses, and treats you like an inferior people? Who can put up with that type of monstrous bull, Mr. Cat Litter Box? Who can put up with that, Shmuel Katz? Shmuel Katz. Who can put up with that? You little man of little intellect. The only reason that you are even printed here is that you are Jewish. If you were an Arab, they wouldn't allow you to print in the Jerusalem Post, just the opposite. No, they only allow things that are pro-Israel. You are unfair, your people are supremacists, racists, and we at Jew Watch follow you, and we watch you. We watch you, we watch the Post, we watch all of the Jewish organizations and publications. And we inform the people of what you, sir, are about. That's what we do. And you need to go back to your litter box and dump some more things in it so that I can report on them as we go along here at You Watch. You're listening to Frank Weltner. This is The World in Review. Thank you very much, and return to this site in the future for more programming.